That's true. You're probably right. That is there. I didn't think of that, but you're right.
And I don't think we certainly don't have that in the chariot.
I want you to go back and look at the wheel, which is the one before the chariot.
The one before the chariot.
And you will see the similarity. So you could say,
yes,
in a way, because the hair is behind her back, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what is the symbol of your back? What does your back symbolize?
The backside of the tree.
Huh?
The backside of the tree. Oh, look at that picture. I see Adam Kadmon.
Okay. Your back symbolizes a part of you that you cannot see yourself.
Very true.
So if you can't see that part of yourself, what is it? It is your unconscious.
Okay.
So now her hair is covering her back, and it's dark.
Right.
So this could be that this darkness of her hair, which is coming down from the top of her skull, where this thing is, covering her back all the way down to her calves there, can represent, and that is unconscious. This could be like the divine darkness.
Right. That was my...
That's what you were getting at, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just try to put these images together here.
Right.
Oh, I have these images reflective of Adam Kadmon. The Tree of Life is imprinted right on her body. And you see that with a crown at the top of her head. There's the light of the crown.
All right, well, go back to... Also, then go back and look at...
the wheel?
The wheel. Yeah, David, I want you to look at the wheel now, too, as another version of Adam Kadmon.
Yeah, I agree with that.
See, here the Adam Kadmon of number 13 of the wheel, right?
Right.
Yeah, notice the differences. Notice how those, here there's the wheel is up front, so it's not unconscious, which you can see. And also notice that the wings aren't touching at the top. They're open. And here they're closed. You know, that could represent maybe yogic trance, you know, versus, you know, introversion versus extroversion.
But certainly the wheels, the wings have tremendous significance to consciousness. And the ability towards illumination and unity.
In other words, for you, when you see wings in this, it means you're thinking that it represents what again?
The ability towards illumination and unity.
Creation
has already occurred.
We're not even
dealing with that here.
What we're talking about, we have the light around her hair, so you know, so we got light as an image, and it can be an image of the thing. So, what does wings represent?
Well, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What I'm getting is from wings in the chariot. The figure is soaring.
Right.
Whereas in strength, the figure is almost suspended or at rest.
Yeah, it's sort of like she's not soaring. If she's doing anything, she's resting.
Mm-hmm.
Or hovering. She requires no pedestal.
As far as we can tell, there's no pedestal.
She's also protected. The thing is, that's her inner strength that is protected here. Those wings are protective.
Almost as if she's in a cocoon of her own enlightenment.
That's the thing about the wings being it could represent introversion.
But the cocoon is a stage along the path.
Yeah. And again,
it's definitely one of Saint Teresa's stages.
Well, all right, but now let's deal with nudity. We've got nudity and clothes all the time here.
Mm-hmm.
What does the nudity represent?
a divine divinity, a an aspect of divinity.
Well, then, what does clothing represent?
I would have to say clothing represents an aspect of divinity's representation on Earth.
Maybe let's try to make it simpler than that.
When you're nude, you're vulnerable.
There's vulnerability in
vulnerable
there.
You're not hiding
anything.
Right.
When you're clothed, you have a mask on. It represents a social recognition.
Right.
So there is some difference here. Maybe we haven't fully pinned it down yet between what nudity is and what clothing is.
Well, I think nudity represents in this particular Terrell and in the other Terrell too. It's the difference between divinity's representation, personal representation, or it's like Peter or the Pope or whatever. They're heavily clothed. And we noted in our conversation, Paul, that the emperor and the empress are not crowned. And I do think, you know, they represent human representations of divinity. Sacramental. And that this is not a question of sacrament or of being worthy of the sacrament. This is pure grace.
Well, one of the things that we have, again, with these images that are similar, is we have the wheel in which she's clothed on her hair later.
Right.
And the wheel is up front. And then with...
But the wheel...
She's not clothed.
Pardon me?
This image, she is not clothed. I'm just
saying... You're talking about strength.
I'm talking about strength, yeah.
Okay. But in the wheel is representing a human, as above, so below, a human representation of
they could be mirroring each other at a different stage.
I don't think that
you've got divine images versus human images.
I'm not trying to be that cut and dry, but clothing versus nudity is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, but I don't think it separates divine and human. I think it separates some attitude of awareness or consciousness.
Well, I think it's like a liturgical thing, clothing.
Let's move on to the magician.
A second, I'm looking at this picture again. I'm just got a flash.
Which picture are you talking about?
Oh, strength. And the darker image of strength, the second image, that hair looks very dark. And what struck me was that the story of Samson and Delilah, that he has strength in his hair. And the thing is, to me, that was really interesting that this picture shows her hair. It's so abundance of it.
Yeah.
And that's it, strength. And she's being protected in that picture. I think there's a very definite inner protection of the strength she has developed through her journey with the chariot.
And I think that goes along with her hair is coming down, grows from the crown of her head, that it's covering her back, which represents the unconscious, or could represent the unconscious, and that it's dark. Which, if we go back to the reading on the 15th path, it goes on and says, the substance of creation in pure darkness.
You go from the wheel to the chariot, and the wheel, she has blonde hair, it's shoulder length, and the chariot, he has bobbed hair, it's dark, and it's knocked down to his back, and then the strength card, her hair is grown fully. Abundance.
All right, let's continue. Let's move on to the magician, and suddenly we got somebody clothed again.
And hairy again, and it's hair, but it's...
We got the halo. not as quite as bright now, but maybe the one of the reasons why is because of the five-pointed star above. Again, the letter that goes with this is nail, pin, hook, or peg. You also have this version of this three-crossed version of the cross that he's holding up high. You can also see that he does have the classic magician pose from the Rider-Waite-Smith thing, where as above, so below, where one arm is high, held up to the seventh, and the other one is held down, in this case pointing not only to the ground, but to the table, which has four elements on it.
But it's not pointing, Paul. His palm is gently curved.
All right, but it's still, the arm.
It's like sheltering it, yes.
The arm is
sheltering on that cup.
So you do have this image, and then you have the other two images, which are pretty much alike. Okay, but he also has something of significance at his chest level.
Right.
And
I think we need a magnifying glass.
Well, actually, it's a cross. If I take off my glasses and look with a magnifying glass, you have a Roman cross, and at the center you have this rose.
Mm-hmm.
So that thing in the center is a cross with a rose, where his heart is, the center of his chest.
I see it as a star, too.
And
that's okay. You said it as a rose. I see the cross.
You see the cross? I think it's the cross in all three images. You can also see that the staff he's holding is the three-cross. There's a name for that. I don't know what remember what it is now. Cross there.
I think it's an Orthodox, one of the Orthodox crosses.
Yeah.
That's on the Hierophant. Sorry, isn't it? He's having that on his staff as well.
What I'm finding so interesting is the elemental implements on the table.
All floating.
They are not our usual.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
You have two chalices.
Mm-hmm.
Floating. They're all floating. They're suspended off the table. They are not on the table.
As is the table suspended, as is the figure, we presume.
And one's a rose, and one looks like a wheat shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the way I'm seeing. I don't know if the one's a rose. I thought it might be a carnation, but probably a rose would probably be a better guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the
wheat shaft.
You think the other one is wheat. So what do you think those would represent?
Well, the wheat shaft is part of the Eucharist. It looks like it has a Eucharist at the bottom.
Well, I'm thinking
the table looks like a Eucharist.
I'm thinking that the wheat might represent the earth, and that one of the chalices definitely has a halo around. Well, they both have halos around them.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the chalices has more of a halo around it than the other. The one on our right.
The wheat is growing out of a circular thing.
It might be like something holding it. But I think it represents the four elements. Then the question would be, what would those elements be? And I think one of the chalices may represent light or fire. The other one, water. So that leaves air and earth. We have the rose and the wheat shag. So I think the wheat might represent earth. This is just a guess.
Okay. I think when is the sacrament that? I think when is the sacrament of the hidden church, and when is the sacrament of the Roman church?
Do you know to what degree weight is actually in the, well, he actually is in the hidden church thing.
Yeah, totally. Which he, the right, is representing.
It looks like the wheat chaff is going out of an egg. The egg has two bands on it.
Yeah, when I was looking at that, I thought it might be a little cup or something.
Doesn't look like that.
Well, again, the wheat growing out of the egg would be, again, might represent the, again, as I was saying, the earth.
Well, I think that's true, and I think what Johanna said originally is that it might be the communion maker, and the whole thing, the wheat and the circular shape.
Yeah, well, again, that would be the sacramental element, so that would mean that the rose would be what?
The hidden church.
No, rose would be divine
rose
love.
Would be the...
Well, the mother, the Magdalene, the female church. The church of...
Or what element would it be?
Depends upon what color it is.
What element would it be?
It depends upon the color, doesn't it?
Well, we don't have color.
Yeah, that's the problem. Okay.
Well, what did you say would be passion? Would it was a rose?
It could be fire.
David, it's hard to say.
So if you got fire, earth, air, and water, the rose would then be
fire.
Air.
No, fire.
No, because I think that the one chalice is actually a lit. Is a lit chalice.
Yes, the one just is, yes.
The one on our right.
Right. The one on our right is left hand.
Is a lit candle.
Yes, mm-hmm. I could see it in the colored pictures. I mean,
no,
you have to really look closely, but if you look at the gray-toned one, you can see that something is
okay, but
in there.
Considering that these images are interrelated, considering that there's several ways of looking at the images. One is that side by side and then alternating.
Well, if you look at the trajectory of the image of the magician, it's fascinating to me. It seems to get larger, and as they get larger, the figure itself becomes more amorphous. But the
you're talking about the different images of the magician.
Correct.
All right, I'm talking now about the different images and the cards of how to interrelate them. That's what we need to be doing also. We're looking at each card, but we're also going to interrelate them with the other cards we've seen and see how they mutually support and frame each other. So, for instance, this is a closed card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had two images that look a lot like each other, which was strength and the wheel. So now, let's think of the chariot and the magician. In other words, we're dealing with side by side, also and alternates. So we have this, as David said, the soaringness of the chariot versus the one clothed. Aspect of the magician, and where look at the posture of the chariot, in which like fully transcendent or transcending, and you have here a figure of balance, but also again, what do we think does the nudity might mean, besides being just contrastive?
In the chariot itself?
Not just the chariot itself, but the chariot versus the magician. Why is the magician clothed, and why is the chariot nude? Does the meaning that's emerging from the magician?
The magician has more of a. I posit that the clothed images are more human, representing a more human stage, and that the naked image is more divine. This is the way I I'm seeing it over.
Human and divine.
Let me
rephrase it in a way that at least seems. At least I find compatible, because I don't find that compatible.
Okay.
So let me say that you're thinking that the nude represents transcendence.
Right.
And clothed means imminent in the world.
Right.
Okay. That's provisional of what clothing and nudity means. By the way, a dissertator, somebody's perfectly, during the week, if you got a few minutes, do some research on the difference between clothing and nudity and its symbolic meanings, and come back and maybe we'll have a better way to understand these cards.
Sure.
You know, I mean, well, we don't have all the answers here, and I'm not going to provide them all, so everybody's... What you provide me is an email I'll share with everybody, but if you don't provide me with anything, then we'll just get what we put into it.
Well, may I interject something?
Sure.
The only time, well, in Genesis, man put on, what do you call it, clothes himself, whether in whatever, fig leaves or whatever, after he fell.
Right.
And nudity may be an aspect of paradise, or the innocence before the fall.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Yeah, that could also represent transcendence, mm-hmm. Your transcendence of the imminent world, the fallen world, and so forth. And clothing can represent a sense of sin, a sense of our imperfection, or as Cynthia likes to say, the human world. I don't know how human we are when we think of ourselves as perfect, but... Okay, what about this five-pointed star above his head? What do you think that means?
We call the five-pointed star pentacle, P-A-N, as opposed to pentacle, P-E-N. It's one of those perhaps British versus American, but I don't think so. I think he makes a big point of pentacle, because it's a very, it has a very medieval sound to it, to me anyway. Pentacle, and this particular five-pointed star, I think, represents the five senses. I would have to say the five senses, the five fingers, all things earthly, and it's being raised up.
That's a good point, but I want to also point out a progression, a numerological progression we have here of three legs of the table, four elements on the table. Heart, the Roman cross with the rose at the center.
Right.
And his chest, which is, we could say is five points, Then we could look at his, eyes, nose, and mouth, but the point then is we have the five-pointed star, which, in this case, I would see as, it's going with your idea of the senses, I would say those are the transcendent senses. Those
correct,
the inward
right.
eye,
right.
The inward mind, the inward smell or taste of, you know, or because in this case, you know, this would be the inward taste of light.
Right.
And then we have this transcendent cross, which, you know, which also, you know, this particular form of the cross is the seraphim's wings. In other words, it's six, you know, going by both sides, you know, three on one side and three on the other. You have that.
Why do we have to make it more than the star than it is? Why? Because this book is the Christian mystical, what do they call it, the Christian mystical tarot. That's what it's all about. That's the mystical, the star of Christ, the Christ star.
Well, okay, so but
the star,
even the Christ star, has a practical function in the mystical life, and that could be the inward illuminated senses.
Wait, are we talking about the star of the Magi?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It could be just the star of the Magi.
Well, even at
the star of the Magi
could still represent this inward mystical life.
Absolutely.
I'm not arguing that, Paul. I'm just saying it could be this.
It's not like it only happens over Bethlehem, because then, you know, I'd say, well, where's the cradle? You know, where are the animals? You know.
Right.
In other words, I'm not disagreeing with you in a way, but you know, there is a practical, or an experiential basis for some of the symbolism that we can grasp a hold of. Moving along, it's not like we're finished with any of these images here, but we're going again from the clothed to the nude, and here we have a male nude.
In the pool.
And the pool is the anti-self, according to Yeats. Communion with the daemon. The fool is the event horizon of logic and an exhaustion of all the masks and strategies of the mind. He is placed at the interface of the abyss, alluding to the cliff edge of the Waitsmith Tarot. It is the point of each tree. Zion, which means sword or spear or weapon, pierces the breast of Christ and clearly shown in the stigmata of the figure. So this is the fool as the harlequin. This is the fool. This is Christ as the harlequin. You have the stigmata. The sacred heart at the moment which is pierced is the richest symbol. I don't see. Do you think that there is an image of a pierced heart here?
Oh, definitely, under the fool's left breast.
Yeah, I'm going to look at the second image, and it's there, too. So okay, that's just something I hadn't noticed before.
That's very clear on the darker image.
And then contemplative things, paradox, redemption, edge of the mind, all that, not self passage, the abyss, the dark night of the soul.
Okay.
So what is this? Big round dark thing.
That's the dark night of the soul. It's the event. It's the event horizon. He's at the event horizon. He's ready to move into it.
Could it be death itself?
Yep. And why not?
Well, what are the feet resting upon?
The world.
So you see the world down there, the light world. And you see this this big thing here as the darkness. So is that the darkness of the divine, or is that the darkness of the sins of the world?
That's interesting because perhaps this is the round figure here is the pentacle that we saw before in The Magician.
I think it's Malkuth. I think we're standing on Malkuth.
Well, why don't you look in this book on page 90-something, rather. And,
in Sanctuary?
Look up the Fool. And the Fool says it's between Daff and Piperith.
Okay, so then that's the ferret, all right.
Okay, so that's where it is, between Daff and Piperith.
Half the High Priestess and right away there.
Now, what 97 are you talking about?
The tree that the images are laid upon.
Okay.
The new tree.
Now, if you actually look at my notes on the day of the week that we're at.
But it's not on this.
Well, it's not in the book, obviously. But
okay.
Week two, if you go to week two, what I've done is I've listed the first line is for the Fool, as it says the Fool, this is what planet's related to, and then it's color, and then it's note. Now, those are not relevant to specifically this deck. And then I relate it to Daff and Tiferet, and then the letter. So Daff, so you can check out where these fit on this on the paths of this particular version. Yeah. And then underneath that is all those, the Adam Cadman, the babe and the egg, on the lotus, and the vagabond breath. Those are all the names of, and titles of the Fool that comes from the Golden Dawn tradition. And that's, so that's straight Golden Dawn stuff. And that's just, so for instance, the babe and the egg on the lotus. That dark thing that could be there could be seen as sort of as a dark egg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the green giant of spring, the knight errant, the stranger in a strange land, the wanderer, the aboriginal chaos, Tao, spirit, the joker, the babe in the abyss, you know, the divine bum, whatever that is, freedom, the redeemer of every man, the Holy Ghost, the eccentric, spirit of aether, the androgynous one, fire scintillating its own. Again, those are from the Golden Dawn and aren't necessarily relevant to the weight material, but they're there to stimulate our imagination.
So the Fool goes between Dot and the Ferret.
Okay, well, let's look specifically at the relationship between the Fool and the Magician, what we've got here. You know, I mean, even in the Rider-Waite deck and in the most decks of the Tarot, there's an intimate relationship between the Magician and the Fool. And even here, they're kept together, where that's not always the case, but in this case they are. Together, even in this revised path working, and but there's, you know, there's some serious contrasts here. For one thing, the Fool is more explicitly a Christ-like figure. His arms are upspread and raised.
And he's also Herculean.
Yeah, but which, and the way those arms, they're similar to the figure in the chariot. See, I mean, you know, of course, in that case, his palms are upward. Here, the palms are downward. But the arms are upspread, up angled in a V formation. See, so palms up, palms down. Palms up, what does that mean? Aspiration moving on high. Palms down, descending into the world. Descent into the world. Maybe this is the descent of the Christ into the world.
Yeah.
The divine darkness.
On that note.
Mm-hmm. He's got the stigmata on his feet, his chest, and his left hand.
Right.
Paul?
Yeah?
Yeah, as I'm looking at the tree, it seems to me that the fool, we don't know when we are the fool, when we carry the burdens or the tests that the fool is required to make. Especially when I'm looking at the position on the tree, the revised tree.
Uh-huh.
And almost to say that Christ, when you, and the similarities to the Christ figure, when I think of the last temptation of Christ, how everything of every human emotion was felt, but not understood. And that destiny leads you somewhere, and it's not always where you really willingly want to go. Okay, that's me for now.
Okay, okay. But again, we do have this interesting contrast between the fool and the chariot, and now we have the fool and the magician. And the magician, he's like half transcendent, and he's clothed, he's half transcendent and half immanent, and this is, by emphasizing that, I'm saying that the transcendent is the upraised arm, and the immanent is the downward cast arm, which means, you know, towards the world. And he's sort of a double-minded, you know, he's got the rose cross in his chest, you know, and there are the elements of the world there. And he has the aspiration of the stars. Now we have the fool coming along. I'm still not fully convinced that circle necessarily represents the divine darkness. It could also represent suffering of the world, since he could be crucified too.
Absolutely.
To that darkness. So it could be the divine darkness, or more likely could represent, the human knowledge, you know, that is ignorance, that he's here to redeem.
Yeah, but on page 82 it says that the path of fool is the path between Dot and Tiferet. That would definitely be Dot up there in the Tiferet, standing on Tiferet.
Well, what is Tiferet, David, in this particular rendition?
It is.
So in other words, so you're saying in some ways that darkness is Doth, the darkness above is Doth,
mm-hmm.
and the Tiferet would be the small...
82. That plate. If you look on page 82, it goes along with that plate. It says on page 82, plate 17, you know, plate 17 is the fool. And the path connects Dot and Tiferet.
That's right. Yeah, okay.
So that would be Dot, the dark, and the bottom would be Tiferet.
Yeah, but so what are you saying, David? That's obvious here.
But you're all saying it wasn't that.
Paul, no, nobody has said that it isn't that.
Yes, I'm Cynthia. Paul has been talking about it as the world of suffering. That's not what
Dot's
all about.
Oh, I thought you were referring now to his standing on Tiferet, so to speak, because the image shows a larger circle of light. Well, I think knowledge can be dark.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I don't think that, and knowledge can be an impediment to divine union. I don't know whether Waite ever intended that, but certainly the mystics have referred to it that way.
Well,
potentially that way.
Okay, well, the other thing we have here is we do have that the fool is nude. I mean, so we again are at the question of what is the nudity of the things. Actually, David, I think you probably have it hit the nail on the head as far as the symbolism goes. That the symbolism is so obviously in probability that dark thing is Das, and the small thing, and it, and the pool is between them. You're probably correct here specifically. One of the things we might want to go back and look at then would be to see if the images does the image hold up then for the magician. So let's look at where the magician is. And the magician is between Chokma and Chesed. Okay? Would you see that Chokma would represent the five-pointed star? And Chesed the table?
I don't know.
Well, I'm just trying to see if there's any, if we can find some consistency in the images. I think you found one in the pool. Likewise in the chariot. You know?
It depends on whether we're going up or down.
It doesn't matter. Just look up the images and see if there's see if you can find it. So for the chariot, it's between Chokma and Das. I think that you found a really good association for the fool that makes a lot of sense. But I'm just trying to see if that symbolism will help us decode some of the other pictures.
If you look at plate 14, he's standing, figure in the chariot is standing on this black disc, which would represent, that would represent Dot, okay?
Okay, so you're seeing the dark disc there as Dot, okay?
And Chokma is the point of wisdom on the Tree of Life. Well, we can't go along with, I guess we can, the Emperor, the Seraphim.
Well, yeah, you could say this, because the Seraphim, right? Remember I was saying that those six-pointed wings represent the Seraphim? Seraphim, in some ways, is an image of wisdom. It definitely represents Chokma in that way.
So that was it. Now, what are those two figures down? Around Dot down there that look like some sort of lemurs or something with the wings.
That's part of the wings.
Wings of what?
I mean, the.
Are we looking at the image of Dot now?
No, we're looking at the chariot.
Okay.
Page 14 on page 103.
Okay.
And what are those two wings representing?
Good question. This is,
what are those two wings
represent? Dot as transcendent knowledge, right?
Transcendent knowledge, okay, that would be good, Paul. I think that goes along fine.
Whereas in the Fool, we have Dot as some kind of oppressive. It could be oppressive knowledge.
Okay.
From a different level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying it's a possibility that. It is, and
what's the next image? The next image is.
We've got to move on. We have to move on to the High Priestess.
Listen, Paul, and everybody, I have to leave. It's my birthday tonight, and we have a dinner engagement. I have to get to.
Oh, happy birthday!
Well, happy birthday! You put up.
Thank you very much.
Your birthday. I really appreciate that.
Happy birthday, David.
That's a true sacrifice.
Anyway, you guys be good, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And we'll have to figure out the High Priestess and the Last Judgment without you.
You will. You'll make it, I'm sure. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. So,
bye, David. Thank you.
Unfortunately, with most of the images today, we haven't had any of the color images to go along.
Good evening, Paul. This is David.
Has left the contents.
Oh. With the High Priestess, Bina and Geber, Chesed, Lady of the Sacred Mystery, This is the next image on.
There is a colored image.
Ma and fear. Letter. And indeed, the value of Bina 3 and Gerbera 5 equals the value of 8 with his chest. Contemplate unity through devotion, life, grace, and new beginnings of all high priestess. The house of influence, by the greatness of whose abundance and influence of good things upon creative beings is increased. So it's on 115. And now, let us move. Notice the character at the very bottom of the plate. Very similar to the Fool in a way. Except in this particular case, the Fool is probably new, but turned around. His back is towards us and looking up.
And in the next one, he is robed.
Huh?
In the next image of the High Priestess, that small figure, possibly the Fool, as you say, is robed.
Yes.
And standing as if on a cloud amidst stars.
That's right. And then move over to the third image that we have.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's either on light or land and nude. Yes.
Yeah. So we have two possible nudes, one possible cloth. It's reminiscent of the Fool, because we've just seen the bend of the Fool. His arms are outstretched, and here they're outstretched at shoulder length, like I'm going to embrace this fountain of light. Or if it's not a fountain of light, it's maybe water descending.
Now I thought she was moving up and the water was descending towards him as she rises. And in the third image, she chooses to reveal herself to him. That's how I saw it. As three images.
I actually look at all the images as trying to deal with the same idea, rather than telling a story.
A trajectory?
Okay. Yeah, rather than having a trajectory, but
all right.
But you know, whatever works for you. So for me, I'm saying, well, what seems to be important here in the uncolored image, her headdress, which is very much the crown of Isis, in its obvious way with the horns and the golden egg above her head. Again, she's got the long hair. In this case, it's veiled over, but it's still sort of apparent in that. She's obviously sitting. So again, good question that we haven't dealt with much tonight, which was the difference between sitting and standing. Most of our images have been standing tonight, of one sort or another. A high priestess, in this one, seems to be sitting. And there's the moon. And in the second image, in which her crown is more obscured, but her hair is more drawn. So the last image of the high priestess, there's the sickle moon. And then there's also those two Hebrew letters, which were referred to, I think, in the notes by Tally, which is indeed the value of Bina and Geberuth, 3 and 5 equate the value of 8, which is Chef. It may be what those two letters represent. I'm not sure. My Hebrew is...
So, Bina, in the traditional weight Smith deck, is the Empress, and Gabura, the Hierophant, and 8 page is, actually goes back and forth between strength and justice. Now, does that have any relevance to this?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, okay.
Yeah, I think spending a lot of time trying to integrate the white, Coleman Smith images with these could be very fairly confusing.
Okay.
Particularly at this image of our of understanding this. I mean, if we really understood these better, then comparing them might make sense, but not in our initial go through.
All right.
She's
one of the most in the third image, and at the back of the book itself is the image.
Yeah, it's one of the best images in the collection.
And often this kind of inverted vase or vestia pieces. Surrounding her, particularly on the back of the book, in the blow-up, is also, I believe, in the top tarot on one of the images. I'm trying to remember which one. And is referred to by the Herzers as the extended aura, the aura that continues out. Or the chakras that continue out.
Well, the circles around her definitely could represent auras. And the auras are actually most schematically represented in the first color image and also in the non-color image where you have where you have 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got 3 or 4 interpenetrating circles. You have the sickle moon, which is consistent, except in one case it's in a waning position, and in the other case it's in a waxing position.
Right.
I don't know which is which off the top of my head. One of the things here is that with the high priestess here, you know, what is the meaning of the little nude guy with his arms stretched out? What's he? And who is he? And what is he? Is he the fool? You know, my natural tendency in looking at them in this order is, he's the fool. We, by the way, have to, we haven't really dealt adequately with the high priestess, but we really have to move on to, because
last judgment.
Complex. We have to go to the last judgment and at least deal with it in a cursory way. And then, of course, next week we can go back over some of these images again when we deal with the new ones that we've got. But we got the last judgment, Tef, the snake, the coiling and twisting, and there's the thing on Deuteronomy, who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim that it's so that we obey it. This day the heavens and the earth has witnessed against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life. The last judgment of Western mysticism, which was published in 1923. If it had been published in 1922, it would be in public domain.
Now, where are we going? I'm sorry.
On the website.
Right, week two.
Week two.
Okay.
The first link, the issues raised from last week, see notes, see week one for notes.
Okay, I'm very clear. Right. Okay, Lamps of Western Mysticism. Well, I actually have the book.
Without atmosphere match up to any of the, one of them, number 15, it was sighted by Tally and Ken, but it's possible some of the others also are, have correspondences to this Waitrinic images. So, number one, I guess we should start recording.
We're being recorded, yes.
Okay. It is understood now that the Ineffable Union, which is the end of mystic life, is the integration of self-knowing spirit of man in the eternally self-knowing God, knowing and being known therein. Okay. Two. Remember that Das means knowledge. Two. This is the attainment of God. And it is the great work of our manifest life for those who are called thereto. But it is not completed here. I guess here meaning our manifest life. And then think of the second image, which is in our collection, which is the Emperor. We can attain here and now a union of will, a union of motive, and these can become permanent. They are a state of sanctity. There are various degrees in a sense of conscious union, which can be attained also here by following of the inward life. But the records tell us that in the fullness of its highest experience, it is possible for brief periods only. So far as it is possible to discern, the absolute union of our higher consciousness with God would involve ceasing from manifestation. Okay, there you could always think of the Empress. We could also think of how, and I have a big question, which how is the union of will, and how is that related to motive and will? I mean,
how do you get that in the Empress there, Paul?
Huh?
How did you get Empress in that picture? That seems like death to me.
Well, I'm just going by the numbers. I'm that's really what I'm doing here. I'm just going by the numbers, but,
Relating to the number 3 on the major arcana?
Yeah, which should be it's actually number 12 in the major arcana, because Dot, which is number 1, is not numbered. And number 1 obviously fits number 1 here. Or 0, Dot obviously fits number 1 in a sense of knowledge, two levels of knowledge. The other thing that he's talking about very explicitly here is he's talking about union. There's a lot of emphasis on union with God, which is what mysticism is, which in the topology that I gave you is the via unitiva, right? And I'm saying, no, these cards really are dealing with via illuminative.
Mm-hmm.
So though there's some correspondence, I don't think there is for a whole bunch of reasons. I am including it in our discussion because it was raised, and it's by weight. We might as well deal with the author and with what he actually wrote so that we can get our hands on them. The divine union, in its plenary sense, is all-inclusive. It is a union with whatsoever abides in union. If anybody can figure out what that means, tell me.
I'm still stuck on the last sentence in number 3. I don't see how you see that as the Empress.
Well, why don't we just go along with it, David, until we finish?
We're not going to find numerical correspondences with this, except in maybe the one case of number 15, which is cited by Captain Kelly. But we can at least consider that there's a possibility. If you want to, do a mix and match in terms of how these things may or may not fit with the images that we do have, that's a job that you can do if you want to do it. I mean, I'm not saying that they numerically correspond. The divine union in its plenary sense is all inclusive. It is a union with whatsoever abides in union. Again, if you could tell me what that means, I would be happy.
Oh, I was just about to ask that.
Five. We possess all things in God which have their part in God. I have a sense of what he's getting at, but okay. And then according to Raymond Lowe, actually the way that the Catalans pronounce that, since I knew somebody who's Catalan and told me this, the correct pronouncing of Lowe is Lui. It's L-L-U-L-L. Lui. And he was a Franciscan divine, Catalan, who created a machine of all knowledge. Fascinating, particularly from the point of view of Tarot.
Christian Payne Tower cites that exact image, his machine, so to speak.
Yeah. There's actually a really interesting website that somebody has taken his machine and turned it, made it into a simple program.
Really?
On the internet, yeah. You can download it into your computer. Dominus non parts est sed tortum. The Lord is not the parts, but the whole. And that which is left out is nothing. It is the nothingness of sense and illusion, of the lesser and fluidic personality. When the consciousness, this is seven, is directed to the universal and essential instead of the particular and external, it is in that state which may be called the threshold of union. The path of contemplation, as set forth, has its term in this state. And it is therefore a path of freedom. It is wholly a work of consciousness. See, now, number seven and number eight are, from my point of view, he slips back, I would call it backwards. He's talking about union here. Now, of course, union is the goal. And maybe even the motive of the via illuminata, which we are talking about, the illuminative, the central path. And the path of contemplation is the same thing as the via illuminata, and is therefore a path of freedom, and it's wholly a work of consciousness, and consciousness is directed to the universal and the essential instead of the particular and the external. All of that is... almost a definition that when you're learning how to concentrate, you're paying attention to particulars and externals. When you're learning how to meditate, and when your meditation becomes ingrained, it starts to become contemplation, and this is where you're becoming aware of universals, meaning archetypes, and the essential, which is essential here would be the unitive aspect of the divine, the formative aspect of the divine, which would be...
In number seven, to me, you're talking about Doth again, in that particular situation, to the threshold of the gateway into union. It's at that point that...
Well, I think that's what... That's, yeah, I believe that all of the cards address the central passage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why. And this particular list is mixing the two paths, from my
mm-hmm.
point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a little unclear. Okay, number 9. Let us remember at this point that our true self is a mirror which contains all things. That the mirror of the universe is for this reason within, and that if this mirror of consciousness does not reflect God, it reflects that which tends towards illusion. Well, the actual mirror of consciousness is God, and it's not the only God, but it is God. In other words, the mirror of true consciousness is divine. There's no separation. When it reflects, if it isn't aware of that it is divine, then it tends towards illusion. And this is the problem with the via illuminative. You can both be directed towards the true divine, or you can be directed towards your fantasy of the divine. And learning the difference is could be a trial.
Are you speaking of, when you say via illuminative, are you saying BIO or are you VIO?
VIA.
VIA. The way of illumination?
The way of illumination. Yeah, it's the threefold path of mysticism. It's almost a given. It was stated last week, at the very beginning, because that was it's sort of the linchpin of conceptually how to understand all these images that we're talking about. So, the reflection of God therein is a virtue, is in virtue of some high, uplifted summit of our nature, the mountain of the Lord on which the Lord abides, which it otherwise we would not conceive of union. It follows that the path of contemplation, which is this illuminative path, may be described as a path of ascent to our higher being, which would be union. And this is the ascent in love, for it is only in the tongue of symbolism that we can speak. Spatial distance intervene between the states. Well, definitely, here we are talking about this illuminative thing. And again, you can also see why these images. He's claiming that it's necessary, the symbolism is necessary. And spatial distance is not true. Except as sort of illusionary, sort of our projection of our sensate existence onto the inner world. The normal personality does not cognize this supernal part of being, but we must not be deceived by the idea that their separation is on account of a distance intervening in space. It is because of the restriction on self-knowledge in the normal state. That's kind of what I just said in another sense, just explaining sort of the same thing. The essential mystical nearness will be understood if we pay attention to the word consciousness, of which we have no ground for supposing that there is more than one kind in the universe, though the modes are not one mode. You have to remember, at this point, consciousness studies were in an degree in their infancy. The path of contemplation is for opening of a gate in consciousness, and it must be realized that it is a holy gate. Again, well, it's the whole point of this tree. This whole tree, you could say, is in Doff. This is the illumination aspect.
He's talking about the evolution of
I'm talking about
matter and come back into spirit. He's talking about the movement into the gateway of Doff.
We're talking about the gateway of Doff, but you have to look at all of these cards. It begins with, right, the unnamed card begins in Doff, right?
Yeah.
And then we have the tree, and the paths are related. And the Sephira are not dealt with. They're not given a definition.
I thought you said the Sephira were also in paths.
No.
That's a direct quote. But it may be in the Golden Dawn Tarot,
I'm not saying, but we have a different numbering, ordering.
Yes, we do.
Of
we have the paths, correct.
The paths are completely different.
Right.
The Sephira are not different.
Right.
Okay?
Yes.
But so we're on a different level of the tree.
Well, I would posit that what he describes in the monograph, The Golden Dawn Tarot, is the path of emergence, simplistically, and that what he's doing in Wade Trinick is the path of, specifically, the path of return.
I agree.
I don't agree.
I'll hold that for now.
Mainly because the path of emergence and the path of return are dealing with our position here in illusion, in our position in this world. And we have, the path of ascent going to the thing.
So if I'm hearing what you're saying so far, it's that he's dealing with this objectively, not from the standpoint of post-fall. He's taking the position of this is the original tree.
No.
Okay.
What I think we're being offered here in this version of the tree and these images is only that aspect of mysticism which deals with the illuminative way. It begins with knowledge, right? But the knowledge is taking you to, is refining your knowledge to in a sacramental way, right? So this is the bread and wine. This is a sacramental ritual way to go to the the pinnacle of where one would go be in union or begin union. So union is not thou and your unionized. Union has endless degrees within it. However, what he's dealing here now is he's dealing with, and these are the cards we're talking about. We're dealing with a way that our consciousness becomes purified in light, which is grace, and we're starting to recognize how we can move away from the darkness, the dark light of our egotism, to the natural and supernatural light of the divine, and it's sort of we're sort of honing in our senses by through sacramental Eucharist ritual work, so that we will, so that our awareness will be aware of the divine presence. And then in the divine presence, it will be self-emptied enough of our own egotism to where we would have the capacity to recognize union. We're only dealing up to that capacity, which you would say, you could say is knowledge. But what we're really dealing with, but the Divine Illuminative is where, is sort of the, it's a, going to the meditations on the Tarot. The magician of the mysticism is the unitive way. And this is in Tom Berg's The Meditations on the Tarot.
Okay.
Number two is the high priestess way, right?
Right.
That is the Gnostic way. That is the illuminative way.
And then okay, why is the Gnostic way the illuminative way? Because it depends on knowledge?
Well, you're making a too literal distinction about the term Gnostic. Gnostic
okay.
doesn't mean
okay.
everything in Gnosticism.
I understand that.
I know that. But, you know, it's, the stuff is actually quite simple. But, you know, you got to... you know, not try to bring in everything with it. In other words, if you read, go back and read carefully what is meant by the high priestess and what he says about Gnosticism, he's talking about the path of illumination. And if you go back...
Well, definitely she's holding the book or the Talmud or however, the map, the way, in her lap, no doubt about it. I mean, it's very explicit. In every image.
All right. Actually, next week you can go. The question is already there. Go to week three. I've got a question there, which I call a think question, and it will really confound you if you really want to deal with this stuff.
Okay.
So, you know. And again, we're only dealing with the. In my view, and I can be wrong. I'm not saying I'm correct in my understanding of the cards, but you know, at least let's get through this list. So where were we? It could never be an easy path, as I have indicated otherwise, for not in an hour or a day does a man attain union with God, or love encompass its subject. At the same time, some of its stages are easy for some aspirants. Let us realize that it is useless to think of God as without. God is within. There is no part of our experience in God, man or the universe, which arises outside of consciousness. Actually, you could say that God is consciousness. You could say that your consciousness now, is divine presence, is the evidence of grace, unseen but obviously experienced. Because you can't have any experiences without consciousness. If we say that there is something which is, as it were, ineffable in the world above, we need not think it unattainable in respect of ourselves. It may be an untrodden field of our consciousness. The universe itself is that which bears witness to us, it does to us manifest. If, in the sense that has been explained already, we are a mirror which reflects nature. There is another sense in which nature is itself a mirror wherein we behold ourselves. And here, the class, the thing would be understanding what you call generate and regenerate mirror. Nature has fallen, which is a particularly happy Christian doctrine. You know, we're cast out of paradise. The world we live in is not quite the paradise it's meant to be. So our own nature carries with it a way of bending itself in a way that takes us away from its natural holiness. So how do you then transform nature into its pristine paradisical possibility? Well, again, through the sacramental life. you know, which is Doth. But remember, Doth is not knowledge per se. It is a sacramental knowledge. It is the knowledge that is achieved through the grace of communion, of eating the body and blood of Christ, the human God. It is good at this stage to repeat inwardly, "May thy kingdom come," then adding, "The kingdom of heaven is within," and then with deep assurance, "Thy kingdom has come within." And then, if we can formulate this, realizing there is nothing so much that is to be desired in the whole world, the moment we arrive, when we shall know that the kingdom indeed comes in as grace thereof. And if we be faithful to the aspiration, the realization will be true to us. It may come like a thief in the night at a point where we least expect it. The gate of glory opens and we see that God has his throne in the highest parts of our nature. Number 22 would be, you could say, would be that gate of moving to the crown or realization of the unitive. And again, as I said, union is not the end. It actually has its own levels. It has its own levels of integration. So that was provided by Mary Greer, and we thank her for that, since it'll be several weeks before my copy of The Lamps of Western Mysticism comes to me. Anybody got any questions now, specifically about what we just read? Alrighty, let's get on to the fun part, which is why we're here, which is the images for this
week. Well, somehow I had the whole feeling of going through that. I have the whole feeling that it's very simple, and the whole thing is the process, the simple process of getting out of the illusion, out of the ego state, and moving into a higher state of consciousness. And I see that as going up the tree on the journey of return, and moving through the gateway of Doth, and going into the unit of principle with all that is in the terms of Gita and Hope and Keter. It seems to me that that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it is, but we're dealing with a different path now. We're dealing with different paths and associations. That's what these cards are all about. So let's...
I know you're saying that, but I don't see how there's these 22 statements. I don't have to see how they go back to his approach.
I'm sorry, David, I don't understand what you're saying.
I don't understand how these 22 statements go back to these statements from Edward White, his new path structure.
You mean the former structure, the structure of the Golden Dawn?
The one he's talking about in the book.
Yeah, well, that's my conclusion, too. But I thought I would share this stuff with you, Mary suggested we take a look at it.
Wait, which book are you referring to, gentlemen?
We're looking at
the Abiding in the Sanctuary.
Okay.
And we are now going to pay, I want you to undertake, I want to make one statement about the chariot that I stumbled across today. Remember the chariot, the letter for the chariot is Dalis, opening gate or portal. And in the 14th path, Katz and Tali write, is illuminating intelligence, the so-called because of itself, as the chasmal, which is the founder of the concealed and fundamental ideas of holiness and their state of preparation. The chasmal, the wonderful world, means chasm. It means basically it's the gap. And again, you would think of Doth, of course. But I looked at the wing structure on the back, from the back of our charioteer, and I decided, maybe arbitrarily, that is a threefold wing structure. So that there's a possibility that this a nude image could be a seraphim. Seraphim have six wings, not counting the one on the dais, but the ones on the back. You have the short wings, and then you have two longer wings that are sort of folded up above. Not saying that's true. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
How many wings do seraphim have?
Six.
Okay.
And if anybody is interested, you can look up the seraphim and dig up the famous description of the seraphim of Saint Francis by Bonaventura. It is a wonderful medieval allegory on the stages of a mystical path, based on the image of the seraphim, which, by the way, was a vision that St. Francis had when he was in a retreat. It's not this image, but you would find a fascinating. Actually, I think it was also the image of the seraphim. This has been some years since I looked at that material. That may have been the precipient beginnings of the stigmata, which were the bearing the wounds of Christ on his hands and feet. And you can see here there's a possibility that there's stigmata in the palms of the image here of the chariot.
I think those 22 statements are just that statement.
Continue. Huh? Let's go to strength. Go to page 105.
Okay, I feel I'm being cut off here, Paul.
Hello?